Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And conservatives, I hope you're sitting down. Turns out we were right. Raising the minimum wage costs jobs. The latest evidence of this comes from the state of Washington and specifically the city of Seattle. You may remember last year in much fanfare, they decided to raise their minimum wage to $15 per hour. The phase-in for that begins April 1st, and already low-wage jobs are on the chopping block. According to the Washington Restaurant Association, it's not a political problem, it's a math problem. They estimate that a common budget breakdown among sustaining Seattle restaurants so far has been the following. 36% of funds are devoted to labor, 30% to food costs, and 30% go to everything else. The remaining 4% has been the profit margin. With the minimum wage spike, however, that if restaurant owners make no changes, the labor cost in quick service restaurants would rise to 42% and in full service restaurants to 47%. So bye-bye profit. So, Jim, again, this idea that if we just pay all the minimum wage workers more, that their lives will be better. Turns out the minimum wage is actually zero for these folks now.
It's a very simple way for an employer to deal with this, is just to have, you know, make your reduce the number of workers and make them do more work. The other thing is, Greg, this is, strikes me as a wildly complicated law, because you know, what's the minimum wage? And the answer in Seattle is it depends. It depends on whether you are a large employer or a small employer. If you're a large employer, 501 or more employees, starting April 1st, you got to pay $11 an hour, and it's going to work its way up to $15 an hour by 2017. But if you provide health care benefits, you have until 2018 to reach $15 an hour. Now, if you're a small employer, defined as 500 or fewer employees, which you got to figure has got to encompass a lot of businesses in Seattle, particularly the ones that would pay minimum wage, you can either pay a flat hourly rate of $11, or you can pay $10 an hour with the expectation that the $1 difference will be made up in tips, or you can do it through payments of a qualifying medical benefits plan. If they don't make up the difference, the employer must do so each pay period. But wait, if you pay the flat hourly rate, you must reach $15 an hour by 2019. If you choose the second option, you can pay $15 by 2021. At this point, people are saying, huh? What? Wait, which group? What are you, ludicrously complicated, and unsurprisingly, because it treats large employers and small employers so differently, unsurprisingly, the International Franchise Association is now filing a lawsuit. They're saying that the law discriminates against local franchisees, because if you have a franchise, basically you own the local McDonald's, the local Subway, or something like that, you're on the faster track towards paying the higher cost. If you're running Jim's Burger Place, you are on the slower track, and they're basically saying, look, the law is treating two different groups of businesses very differently. Unsurprisingly, the franchises want to be treated as small businesses, and McDonald's and Subway, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Jim's Burger Places want the McDonald's and Subways to be treated as big businesses. It is ludicrously complicated. It is making a hash of things. And unsurprisingly, life is not getting better in Seattle, which is unfortunate because otherwise it's a lovely city just being ruined by progressives.
And unfortunately, it doesn't appear to be that the lesson has sunk through with other liberal leaders around the country. The New York Post has an editorial explaining why this should be strong disincentive for Governor Cuomo and the Democrats up in New York to no longer push for a higher minimum wage, but the message doesn't seem to be getting through. On to the bad martini now. And today is election day in Israel. If you've been following the headlines lately, it's very, very tight. Netanyahu has even said in some of his campaign speeches that he might lose. The big announcement yesterday, the day before the election, Jim, is that Benjamin Netanyahu no longer favors a two-state solution. He says he is now opposed to a Palestinian state, and that will be his position if, in fact, his party is retained as part of the ruling coalition in the parliamentary elections. Jim, this is not the position of a man who thinks he's in a position to win right now.
Yeah, and I had written earlier in the week that, look, on the one hand, this is in the hands of the Israeli electorate. And we look at things through the lens of U.S. policy and our interest in the Middle East. Apparently, Netanyahu, the economy in Israel is not doing so terrific. Apparently, Netanyahu and his wife had some expenditures at their official residence, which seemed like they were kind of frivolous or excessive or things like that. So it's not to say that if the Israeli electorate ends up not, you know, effectively reelecting Netanyahu, then it doesn't necessarily mean all is lost, but it's going to be perceived in Washington, D.C., and in European capitals, and I think in Tehran and Middle Eastern capitals, as a giant rebuke to not just Netanyahu himself, but this entire philosophy of wariness about the Iranian nuclear program, the wariness about the deal and things like that. Look, we all know exactly how the enemies of Israel will perceive it, and this will give them a great shot in the arm. Now, it's going to be pretty complicated because it's a parliamentary system. Each party gets a certain number of seats based on how many, what percentage of the vote they get, and obviously they, you know, they can form coalitions. And most of the time, Israeli leaders need to form coalitions. So it's possible that, you know, Netanyahu will lose votes, have a smaller share, but still be able to cobble together a ruling coalition. My guess is we will not know by tonight exactly how it's going to shake out. But look, I think you assess it accurately, Greg, that a confident campaign doesn't do things like this. A couple other remarks that he has said in the past couple of days have people expecting it's going to be pretty close. And that's not where Netanyahu wants to be at what seems like a really critical moment in its history.
Yeah, clearly the case. I've been trying to think, Jim, what would be the American equivalent of this giant of a flip-flop on an issue the day before the election towards your base? I don't know, would it be Jeb Bush saying, you know what, forget that pathway to citizenship the day before the election? I don't even think that would be as big as what Netanyahu's doing here.
Yeah, but you know, I kind of like that. All of a sudden, all these Republicans are like, all right, I guess I'll vote. All right. You know. But also like that nagging sense of like, well, does he really mean it?
Right.
Basically, in the last 48 hours of an election, anybody will say anything if they think it will help them get elected. Although I guess you could say it's a lot more than 48 hours before the election.
Okay. All right. On to the crazy martini now. And Mitt Romney is back in the ring. No, not for 2016, 2015. And he's literally putting himself in the ring with former heavyweight champion of the world, Evander Holyfield. I listed this in our daily email, Jim, as Romney Holyfield won because there's always a rematch. It's actually for charity. It's for a group called Charity Vision, a humanitarian organization founded by retired Salt Lake physician Bill Jackson to provide medical equipment for poor areas around the world. Romney makes it very clear, it's either going to be a short fight or I will be knocked unconscious. So not what you expect from previous presidential candidates, but it shows once again that he's got a heart for people in need.
You know, I, on the one hand, yes, it's very hard to be too mad at him for doing something for charity. It certainly is bold and unexpected and courageous. Greg, where was this in 2012? boy, he really took that. He's not tough enough. He's not a fighter. He's too nice to heart, didn't he? First of all, this is one of those rare news items where you see it and you're utterly convinced that this is a Onion headline, that this is some sort of joke or something. It's a really good news that it broke on St. Patrick's Day and not, say, April Fool's Day. Because everyone would think, oh, my God, like that's a silly April Fool's Day joke. Nobody would possibly believe this. So apparently this is true. This is real. You're not dreaming this. You're not hallucinating this. And I hope it raises a lot of money for charity. I hope he comes out of the fight in one piece. You got to wonder if Anne signed on to this. And I'm kind of left with this strange thing. There is something a little, it's just so un-Romney. It's kind of garish. It's kind of, you know, I don't say tawdry or anything, but I look at this and I just like shaking my head, Greg, and saying, man, has he been hanging around Donald Trump too long?
I just got one piece of advice. Go for the ear. Go for the
ear. Ah, there you go. Mr. Holyfield, lend me your ear. you know, back when Kid Rock endorsed Romney, largely because of the Michigan ties and he liked Romney's plan to revitalize Detroit, I remember saying that was the most unlikely endorsement anybody had ever seen. And you kind of wonder how exactly did Mitt Romney win over the support of Kid Rock? And obviously the real answer was the Detroit plan. But I had always kind of figured that at some point, you know, that Kid Rock was, you know, evaluating Romney skeptically. And then at some point, Romney takes off his shirt and shows off his full back tattoo that says good manners. And the joke works because you totally don't picture Mitt Romney of doing something like that. And of course, you know, obviously jumping into the ring with Evander Holyfield, like, you know, I know he did the Vulcan neck pinch with that rapper on the plane who was bothering Ann Romney and stuff. There's something very, we missed out on a really fascinating presidency, America. I hope you're happy.
Oh, man. I hope it's on TV. Jim, hard to beat that for crazy. Talk to you tomorrow.
There you go. We can almost retire it, so.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.